Hi there, this is Dan Delta Collins. You're listening to Wandering DMs. Wandering DMs is broadcast live every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time on twitch.tv/wanderingdms and also youtube.com/wanderingdms. We hope you enjoy the show.
Hi everyone, welcome to Wandering DMs. I'm Paul.
And I'm Dan. Today on Wandering DMs, we're going to be talking about illusions in D&D. How have they changed across the editions? And how can your characters defend themselves against illusion magic? All that and more today on Wandering DMs.
Before we get into today's topic, I'll remind everyone, as always, at the end of the show, we will be hosting our after-party chat. That is a live video chat that Dan and I host for all our patrons, and you can join in by becoming a patron. Just visit patreon.com/wanderingdms, join at any tier, and around 10 minutes after the end of the episode, we'll be there to talk to you all live.
We just have the best patrons. We love that part of our week. Thanks to our patron Backrius for checking in that we are currently live on Twitch, YouTube, and Restreambot. Not just a couple of them. Not too early. All three of them at exactly right time. If you thought you saw something earlier, your mind was playing tricks on you.
It was an illusion. Completely an illusion.
A sleight of hand, you might say.
Some say time is an illusion.
Another thing, I've got to thank our patrons for this topic. This was suggested on our Discord server. And again, there's just great conversations coming up all the time. I'll emphasize again, if you're not on our Discord server, every tier on our patron page gets you access to that. So you should be there. And some folks were asking about, you haven't done a specific episode about illusions. And I thought that was a really good idea because they're one of the places that has varied the most over editions of D&D, frankly, the very first spell, you go all the way back to chainmail, the very first wizard spell in the game was Phantasmal Forces, your basic essential illusion spell in D&D. It was the first one. And I do think that the way that that's evolved over the ages has caused trouble. It's caused a bunch of weird prickly issues as they tried to evolve that into D&D, and we're still dealing with it today. It's varied so much.
Do you think in chainmail, Dan, was it more straightforward and functional?
I do. I feel like, and I don't know if you want to pull up the red dot image. You know, again, there's going to be some text here. But so above that first line, it's real easy to state because above that first line is the chainmail rule. It says it's called Phantasmal Forces, plural. And the rule is it's the creation of the apparition of a unit or creature for four turns.
Okay. What exactly does that do, though?
Well, maybe that's up to interpretation by your referee running the chainmail game. Possibly. It's pretty curt. It's pretty concise. So my take on that is I think like my image is kind of like the ghost forces at the end of the Lord of the Rings movie, frankly.
Okay.
Is you can create, you know, forces, which if you look in a dictionary means an organized body of soldiers or sailors or something like that. And that's clearly what they mean by forces. The whole game is just, you know, army units on a table. So by magical fiat, you can just create a new force. And as far as I can tell, it works like a normal unit or creature. It doesn't say here that it's going to distract the opposing player, nor does that make sense because your opposing player knows that you just cast this spell. So as far as I can tell is you get a free unit. You get a free unit of soldiers for four turns, and they probably act like normal, and they can probably do attacks like normal. And I think that's the intent.
Okay. Sort of just temporary bonus, just like say a summoned monster or something like that.
Yeah.
Not terribly different from, okay. I could see it. But again, you got to interpret pretty hard to get there because it doesn't give you much to go on.
Probably got some literary reference. Again, maybe it is the end of Lord of the Rings. Maybe it's the final battle in Lord of the Rings, where Aragorn brings on
illusions, right? They were ghosts.
This technically this doesn't say illusion right now, does it? It says apparitions.
You're right. That is a good point. And a phantasm is maybe a ghost or maybe a yep, that's good point. Very good point.
Right. And then for what it's worth here, then if you want to look at it, the next one down is the original D&D, the 1974 original D&D version, still called Phantasmal Forces. And I'll even point out that decades later, Gary actually misremembered and thought that he'd left it as Phantasmal Forces forever late in his life. And actually, which is clearly not the case in the text later on. But in an interview, he was like, "Oh yeah, it's just, all you can make are a bunch of soldiers. That's what the spell is." but it's in the original D&D. It's still called Phantasmal Forces, but now it says the creation of vivid illusions of nearly anything the user envisions is what the text says there in every D&D version. It actually lasts as long as they want to concentrate on it. It says it goes away if it's touched by some living creature. And it does say here that damage caused to viewers of a phantasmal force will be real if the illusion is believed to be real. So I'm personally assuming that's continuous with chainmail, that it does actual damage. But I'm thinking like, wait, if it goes away, if it's touched, how does the illusion possibly, and it does say illusion now, how does the illusion damage somebody for real, but also goes away when it gets touched? Like, I'm like, don't those things contradict each other? If I run up and punch you, I'm doing damage, but I also go away because I touched you. So what?
Yeah, that is very strange. Man, the best I can come up with is if you would get into like a case of, well, what if I summon an illusionary dragon and it breathes illusionary fire? Does the fire count as touching?
Right?
Like if my illusionary archers shower you with illusionary arrows, does that count as touching? Yeah.
If I was a player, I would want to argue, yes, the arrow touched me, the fire touched me, right? Totally
sure.
Big
well,
argument.
Yeah. I mean, it 100% depends on which side of the fence you're on, right? If I was the person casting Phantasmal Force, I'd be like, no, of course that doesn't count as touching. You didn't touch the actual creature. You touched the phantasm of fire.
You know, see, and I mean, this is the kind of thing that you're totally going to have when you're in a competitive situation. You're going to have this debate at the table, and I don't want it. I frankly don't want
this. It's 100% the core problem with illusions, I think, throughout the game, is that there are some, and I'm sure we'll talk about it, there are some spells that get more narrow, right, and talk about more specific things about this is just this kind of illusion, it does just this sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But more often than not, illusions are in this weird state of A, being very ill-defined, and then B, often lead you also into this weird, like, meta versus in-world argument. Well, does your character believe they exist? Well, I say I disbelieve. Oh, Jesus, right? Yeah.
Yes, 100%. 100%. And I think that's, you know, partly rooted in the fact that the spell in chainmail was effectively real. You're making actual real forces that move around the table, are real to both players, do actual damage. And this transition has left these bits and pieces in the DNA of, is it an illusion or is it something else for this particular spell? And then for what it's worth, I don't have everything here, but I do have the first edition AD&D text at the bottom. And as usual, it gets fleshed out more and more. One thing is, for a disadvantage, they dig into the fact that in original D&D, they said it's visual. So now first edition says, oh, very careful, there's no audio to it at all. So if you're really clever and you realize that it's not making any sound, perhaps that's going to foil it. And then you get about halfway down the text here, you get this bit where it says... I can't help but laugh. It says, creatures which disbelieve the phantasmal force gain a saving throw versus the spell. And if they succeed, they see it for what it is. So this is exactly to your point, Paul, of you've got the play. So you're at a point where the character thinks it's an illusion and the player is incentivized to say, I disbelieve, which then triggers a saving throw, to determine whether the character disbelieves. And this caused this running joke, and there's no disadvantage of that, of every player might as well say, I disbelieve about every single thing they confront in the game, just in case it's an illusion. I disbelieve the door, the floor, the roof, the monster, the treasure, the desk, the library. Yeah. You might as well just disbelieve everything. And there's multiple jokes in the old Dragon magazine about that.
It was definitely a big, right? And there was an era of play, I think, where that was very, it was a common joke, right? And it would extend well beyond, like, oh, I disbelieve in the monster. I disbelieve in the plot. I disbelieve in the very thoughts in my own head. Like, whatever. Yes. In fact, the whole game is an illusion. And in fact, we are just a group of nerds sitting around a table with books and dice. You succeed, player.
Give me your character sheet. You successfully disbelieved the whole game. Give me that character sheet. Roll a new character.
Your own existence. You are but some scribblings on a piece of paper.
Now, I'm going to jump forward a little bit on this, because as far, more or less, that's generally about the end of my personal extensive knowledge of D&D editions. The second edition usually copies the text forward, and they did, basically. Third edition wiped out Phantasmal Force. They, okay, this is so troublesome and problematic. We're going to wipe out Phantasmal Force. We do have minor image in third edition, which is kind of sort of the same thing, really. It's visual only. You don't get audio cues. In third edition, illusions cannot really do damage. And then, to my surprise, and maybe you know this better than I do, Paul, researching for fifth edition brought back Phantasmal Forces in a slightly different way. And then, sure enough, among the ways it can only affect one single person now, is a second level spell. It can only affect one single person. And sure enough, the target can choose to inspect the phantasmal object or creature. And if so, they get an intelligence save. And then the illusion, then the phantasmal force doesn't affect them anymore. So they don't call it disbelief, but that mechanic actually has come back in fifth edition. Yeah. I was shocked to find that out.
That's fascinating. You know, so I always wondered, so like, I mean, one of the problems with phantasmal force in particular, right, is it's originally, you mentioned in fifth, it's a second level spell. Originally it's a third level spell, right? And so
it has bounced around between first and third. It was actually second to begin with. Second edition dropped at the first level. And then I think somebody raised it to third level. So I believe it's bounced around between levels more than any other spell.
But in first edition, AD&D, it was third, correct?
It's second. I'm
right? Isn't that the text we have here on the screen?
You're right. Good catch on that. Right. Okay. So it was second in original. It was third in first, and then in second it was first. That's what, two to three to four across those editions. You're right.
It's very confusing. But I guess in my memory, I'm always remembering the first edition AD&D ring. If we're looking right here, third level spell. Then my logic as a player is this spell had better be as good as a fireball. Right. It had better be as good as. And so, like, there's a lot of expectation. And the other thing I'll pick on in first edition AD&D is that we also see the illusionist class, right, or subclass.
Yes.
Apparently, illusions were so predominant in the game at this period that they needed or warranted an entire subclass. Like, how? I will say, personally, never saw any player in the era of playing first and second edition. I never had one player choose to be an illusionist. And I always got this impression that, like, a lot of spells were added to fill out the illusionist spell list.
I have the illusionist spell list in an image if you want to look at it.
Oh, yeah, sure. Great. Yeah. Is that the orange one? Mm-hmm. Like, I sometimes wonder, you know, is the whole, like, oh, this one does have sound and this one doesn't have sound, or there's a separate spell to cause sound. I always wondered, is that just somebody getting finicky with the design to try and flesh out, like, okay, well, we need more variations. Right? We need more variations of illusion spells, so let's create more stuff.
I feel like, looking at this list, I feel like Wall of Fog is misdirection, blur are things in that spectral
Each
force.
Self, that's a nice one. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Blindness, really? Oh, okay, I guess. Yeah. There's some odd spells in here. And yeah.
And not every single one of these is an illusion spell, to be clear, but most of the, you know, most chaos, demi-shadow monsters, stuff like that. And in general, as expected, you know, they get more real with the higher levels. And that's not crazy. That makes sense. So things like demi-shadow monsters or phantasmal killer have specific clear-cut rules for how much damage they can cause, and you know, things like that as they get a little bit more part of reality. That kind of makes sense to me. I don't hate that, frankly, but I agree. I don't think I ever had a player, and you know, as is the custom, you needed higher ability scores to qualify for it.
Yep.
For the illusion class. It seemed kind of attractive. It seemed exotic. Maybe, you know, I might have had one. I might have had one, like maybe a gnome fighter illusionist, which you were allowed to do, might have happened for me. But once you got into it, you don't have fireball. You don't have you don't have these big blasty spells. And it, I think we discovered it seemed a little weak once you got into it.
And I can't remember if this exists in first, but I think by second, we start to get the idea of like, well, you can specialize in any of the schools of magic.
Yes,
right,
exactly.
Right. And then once that door was open, it was immediately obvious that, like, you know what, there are much better schools to specialize in than mm-hmm. illusion. Right. Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, I would like to specialize in fireball, please.
Right, right. So, yes, so you get tons of vocation specialists. You know, sometimes you get, you know, your edgy necromantic necromancer mm-hmm. specialists, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
That's generally, I think, the kinds of stuff I would see. It's weird. It's weird. Okay, let me take a step back here from the illusionist, because this is one of the problems of me having this conversation is, like, frankly, I just haven't seen it, right? My players tend to avoid the illusionist class. They tend to avoid the phantasmal force sure. spell, like, just not on their radar as a thing to bother with. Like, just doesn't cut mustard versus the other stuff a wizard can do, so screw it. The other major place I see illusions in the game that I would love to talk about is in the material. In, like, oftentimes they show up not as the invocation of a spell, but just this GM fiat kind of thing of, this room has an illusion in it. There's an illusionary wall, there's an illusionary floor over a pit, there's a whatever, some illusion intended to be the trigger for a trap to get the players. Usually it's a trap, right? In fact, now that I think of it, it's either a trap or a secret door, which we already have mechanics for. So why do we need an illusion version for that, Dan?
Yeah, probably as a screw job to prevent your normal secret door detection from working. You could say you've got a wand of secret door detection, but it doesn't work here because this isn't a secret door; it's an illusion instead.
Yeah, yeah. In fact, there is no door. There's no door at all. Mechanic.
Right.
It's just a fake wall. Yeah.
There is that kind of thing. You know, and again, if it's on the DM side, I don't mind. You can fine tune it to, you know, what you want in this particular area. Seems a little bit more manageable than this entirely open-ended thing handed to the player's side.
I will say, though, that even with the GM fiat illusion things in the dungeon, I've struggled with those as well. Because I feel mm-hmm. like there's this odd thing of, okay, well, should I proactively make some kind of check for the players? Should I wait for one of them to announce, I disbelieve, right? Like that, we've already encountered that, we hate that, right? So, but there's something, I don't know, there's something unpleasant about, I'm going to relate this to, so I've recently been playing or replaying a bunch of Baldur's Gate 3, which is D&D themed, the most modern D&D themed game that we have. No, that's probably not true. I'm sure there's other D&D IP stuff that's come out since. But regardless, sure enough, my little party's running around, and every now and then I walk into an area and I hear the little clatter of dice sound, and I see little numbers float over their head of like, oh, all my characters just made or just failed a perception check. failed perception. Okay. And I go, well, obviously there's something here.
Is that, I mean, I haven't played any Baldur's Gate. Is that actually what happens? You hear dice rolling? Yeah. And really?
These little sound effects, you get the little numbers appear over their head. Oh, they all just failed perception checks.
Really?
And I go, I mean, and it's reasonable when it's like, oh, one of them succeeds a perception check and then suddenly highlighted on the screen is, oh, there's a trap over here. Okay, great. We just noticed a trap. Let's do something about that. Huh. But when they all fail, which is common, right? All four of them fail. And I'm like, well, you still spoiled the surprise game. Like, why did you show that to me? So I guess like if you were DMing something, the players are walking into a room and I don't know, there's an illusionary wall with a giant fire belching mechanical trap behind it or something. You immediately roll a check for them? You just hit them with it because they didn't think to say I disbelieve. Like, how do you deal with those kind of illusionary DM things?
Okay, I probably where I've landed on this for my own stuff, and folks can look in the OED Book of Spells specifically for Phantasmal Force, which I have thought about quite a bit in the past. I'm not fond of that. I don't want to roll a whole bunch of dice for checks. I don't want to have players yelling I disbelieve at everything. So for me, as someone in the chat said earlier, it's basically become a hologram. Is my kind of default state for something like Phantasmal Force. So they need to interact with it. If they touch it, then they'll probably find out that it's illusory. If they say I poke it with a pole or something like that, then I would just say apparently it's an illusion because your pole just goes through it. And I tend to want that to be something that is a problem solving puzzle for the whole party. And I don't want it to be foiled because one character has higher wisdom or whatever you're using for that. So for me, I want it to be a party puzzle. And I play it like that is generally and it can't do real damage for what it's worth. I'm not fond of that, but you can fall through it into a pit for real.
So you're avoiding things like illusionary monsters.
I might do that as a distraction. I might have an enemy wizard bring up a monster, and then maybe you're wasting a spell. Maybe you're wasting a round of attacks or something like that.
Because he appears to have summoned a chimera, and it turns out it's just an illusion.
Mm-hmm. Or it comes around a corner or something like that. Yeah.
Interesting. I seem to remember a specific adventure, and I'm racking my brain for which one it is. I can't recall, but where the party is exploring a mansion, and there are secret passages, and there is the person that, I wonder if this is the elf one. Is this the elf one with the glowing sword? It might be that, because that adventure is full of silly, clever stuff like that. But anyway, the person they're searching for is hiding in secret passages that have little peek holes marked throughout the map of where they can look in, and they have a wand of illusion. And so they're like, okay, you know, here's your chance to, as DM, to like screw with the players with all kinds of illusions. But like, that's all they give you. And I'm always like, well, what is he going to do exactly with illusions? Right. What's his goal, right?
Yeah.
It's like open license to just screw with your players, but like, I don't know. Are you going to make some illusion that's so terrible that they're all going to run screaming from the building? Probably not. I guess maybe you're right. Maybe you could drain some of their resources. Like, haha, they've cast some spells, and now they have fewer spells to fight with.
And let me inject that classically, the D&D Wand of Illusion, it casts Phantasmal Force. So you gotta wrap your arms around how does Phantasmal Force works when you do any of these like basic illusion type stuff, like a wand of illusion. That's you're right. So that's not great. That's not A level design. It seems easy. And I've run into a whole bunch of stuff like that of here's an opportunity to screw with your players. End of story in a lot of these classic adventures. And it's a little bit too open-ended. You could have given me three suggestions for what's going to happen here. Would have been real nice. You know, largely so that I don't go completely off the rails with something that's too severe, frankly, right at the moment. On that point, let me criticize second edition for a thing that tended to be a trend, tended to be a habit with the second edition rules. And I love David Cook. I love David Zeb Cook, who was the editor for second edition. But there tended to be a thing where you kept the first edition text in the player's handbook, and then the DM's guide, it tended to go, oh, how are you going to handle this? Well, you could do A, or you could do B, or you could do C. It's really up to you, DM. You could basically do whatever you want to do with these. And so there's, you know, you get the spell text to stuff like Phantasmal Forest. And then I think in the magic section, there's like, here's what you ought to do about illusions. And then actually this is the player's handbook. And then there's an added appendix that also goes into handling illusions. And maybe you could bring up that image, because this bugs the crap out of me. And it goes into this like, well, illusions, what about illusions? We'll help you out. So what it says is, all illusions are cases of DM adjudication. Just every illusion ever shows up, we're just throwing you to the wolves, DMs. It's just, there's no ceiling and there's no floor. They're all cases of DM adjudication. Each depends on the exact situational factors deemed significant by the DM. All of the following points are only subsidiary guidelines to help the DM maintain consistency. And so, again, this, I assume that Phantasmal Force and everything else feeds into this. And the very first example is, okay, well, what about this? Intrinsically deadly illusions, instant kill illusions that are automatically fatal, regardless of level or hit dice or saving throws. For example, collapsing ceilings, inescapable lava pits, etc. The absolute maximum effect of these is to force a system shock check, which is for basically a constitution check that save or die. Surviving characters are not further affected by that illusion. So apparently in second edition, it's canon according to this that I can cast Phantasmal Force. I can say I make the ceiling collapse on my opponents. It's automatically fatal. Everyone has to make a save or die. The end. And I will remind everybody, second edition lowered the level of Phantasmal Force to first level. It's a first level save or die spell now. Is that nuts or what?
That is pretty strange. Wait, so what's the justification? I guess what, that I believe that the ceiling was collapsing on me and I had a heart attack and died.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's an old article in Dragon Magazine where someone defends that as, you know, shock, you know, psychic shock to the system. And, you know, once you cross the boundary of illusions can cause real damage, well, this is just the logical conclusion is, they can do an infinite amount of damage. I can make an illusion of the moon falling on you. That's and you're gonna believe that it does appropriate moon sized amount of damage.
Yep.
When it hits you.
Do all illusions need to be external? Can I make an illusion, Dan, of your head exploding?
Sounds like automatically fatal to me, Paul. When I read rules about, you know, disbelief or illusions doing automatic damage, my brain goes to that highlighted paragraph right there. That's the logical endpoint. You are gonna have this if you follow that train of thought. So I kind of like my illusions not actually dealing out real damage.
What illusions do you like, Dan? What have you dealt with in games where you're like, yep, that was a... You have any good stories of this illusion was used in this way? It was clever or fun or exciting or interesting or just worked.
You know, I do like, you know, and I think about, you know, you as well as other players at my table tend to really like Mirror Image for what it's worth. And that seems usable. It's visceral. We all get it. It's kind of creepy and weird. As I always say, now there's five Gandalfs where there used to be one. And they're flickering and they're moving between each other. So it's kind of like creepy magical, which we probably don't get enough of in D&D, frankly. And then the players can very specifically see how close they are to canceling it out. Is, well, now there's only four, and now there's only three. And you get this kind of rising dramatic moment as they narrow it down to the actual wizard. So that's a spell that seems to work really nicely on a number of levels in the game. And I think we'd like that a lot, actually.
Honestly, and I like it as a player, I like that, because I feel like it's just a very cut and dry defensive spell. Right? Here is a way for me to negate a couple of attacks. And just straight out of negate them, right? Like they're very likely going to hit the illusion. The illusion goes away. That's fine. Stacks nicely with armor class increase. I can cast shield and mirror image, right? Like this. No reason I can't do that. Yep. it's very straightforward. At the beginning of the show, I was mentioning to you the 5e cleric domain skill of trickster clerics, invoke duplicity, which at best, or let me say at worst, is basically just a one-off mirror image. It's, you get a second image of yourself, and then there's very specific rules about, like, you can use bonus actions to move them around, and they have to stay within this distance of you, etc., etc., etc. I'm like, okay. As like a free-ish, cheap, low-end mirror image spell, it's decent. But I also do like that spell for the more, I guess, role-play story parts of it. I think, like, as a player, or as a DM even, I can see cases where it would be interesting for me, rather than to go and confront someone, to send an illusion of myself to go confront them. I'm going to hide over here in the corner, send an illusion of myself to go talk to this guy, and if he turns violent, it's fine. I'm not actually in physical danger.
Right. Now, when you mention that, and that's kind of that spell doesn't last too long in fifth edition, right? It's like a couple minutes or something like that.
I think. Right. Well, it's it's 1 minute.
So when you first brought that up, and I admittedly hadn't heard of that in fifth edition, it's, it's a special class ability, so it's not on the SRD list. What I thought you were talking about was project image, which has been in D&D since original D&D, and it's at the top level of the wizard list. So it's a sixth level, top level spell in original D&D. And we've actually had, so it's not something that we encounter a lot, as usual. We all know about magic missile. We all know about sleep. And we tend to be, all of us tend to be a little bit hazier about the top level spells that we haven't gotten to use so much. So I have gotten some really interesting use of project image in my Wizards Warzone games, where we intentionally put every spell on the table as an option, just intentionally to test this stuff out. And so project image does that job. It's longer lasting. It makes effectively a completely undetectable, perfect duplicate of the wizard, up to and including that the words that you speak and the spells that you cast can, at your option, originate from the duplicate instead. So that's clearly on the table as the perfect option to send in and interact with potentially different dangerous circumstances. And what's happened in Wizards Warzone is that I make the project image, and now I've got two figures on the table. Unlike mirror image, they don't have to stand next to each other. They can move independently, basically. And now my character's got this pincer move that the opposition has to make a decision about, where do I send the fireball? It's not clear which one's the real opponent. Either one can legitimately attack me. And then if you get better than that and you cast invisibility on yourself, the way I adjudicate that is, I think it works perfectly fine. So you're the real wizard's invisible. You've got a project image out there that's possibly distracting the opponents, and you can actually cast your attack spells from. That's a really nifty combination.
Yeah, that is a great combo. Yeah, and that seems very much in the purview of a powerful wizard, right? Yeah, of course. Send a fake image of myself to do my bidding and not actually expose myself to any real danger. That's great.
Yes.
Perhaps slightly moral, like a slightly more moral version of our show on Magic Jar, which kind of is gives you the same level of defense, but in a different creepy way.
There you go. Great observation. Great observation.
How long does the project image last? Is that you get more than a minute out of that?
Yes. Where is my... Sorry.
Yeah, it's all right.
These things quite likely. Okay, as I crack it open, I'm gonna guess that there might not be any limitation to it, actually, which tended to be the case at the time.
Yeah.
So I got my original D&D book here.
Yep.
Sixth level project image. Where are you? Okay, now it does say six. I'm wrong. It says six turns.
Okay.
So six turns here. Which by the book would be an hour.
Yeah.
Not how I would play that myself. Let's see what original D&D says.
It's original funny D&D that says, all of these spells seem that limited in duration, and yet the other major use we see of illusions in games are things like the illusionary floor over a pit trap, which implies somehow it's possible for some wizards to create permanent illusions.
Agreed. And I think, like, by first edition, I think... what am I trying to... I bet it's on that illusionist list. I think by first edition, by advanced D&D, they've got spells on the book to do that.
Yeah.
Maybe one of our viewers can remind us what spell becomes a permanent... I'm trying to think. There's something on the list here. I mean, illusionists have improved phantasmal force. That's probably not it. Permanent illusion. The illusionist list at the sixth level has permanent illusion.
Right. Advanced.
Yep.
Yeah. All right. I don't know. Something about like using an illusion to cover a pit. It's just like, it's just a variation on the pit trap. It doesn't strike me as particularly exciting and interesting to incorporate into my dungeon. I could see things where like you're basically making like a one-way mirror or something. You have a room that looks like it's half the size that it really is because there's an illusionary wall, and maybe on the other side people are watching you. I don't know if that exists or not. Hard for me to think of a case of like a really good use of GM fiat illusion in a module. Like that's as much as it seems common and like classic to me in my head, I also can't come up with a specific case of one where I'm like, oh, there was this one adventure where it did its great thing with an illusion. Like, it's just a slightly more magic-y version of something you could do without it anyway.
I hear you. I think I'm slightly warmer than you on the illusory pit trap, or I often think of illusory bridge. And because, there's no sign that somebody fell through it earlier, right? So it's not something that needs to get reactivated or reset. You could just have a rather large number of bodies plummeting down through it. And it works infinitely well in the distant future. So I can kind of see... It seems elegant, frankly, Paul. It seems like an elegant way of defending your dungeon to me, and I would be prone to do that myself. There's that kind of thing. Now, let me bring up a difficult case for me that I honestly grapple with quite a lot. So there's this classic spell called Hallucinatory Terrain, and it started at the fourth level. It's in, if I recall correctly, it is in Chainmail. And so, like, I'm looking at the first edition text here. Like, I'm thinking on this issue of duration specifically. It says, duration special for hallucinatory terrain. The hallucinatory terrain persists until a dispel magic spell is cast upon the area or until it is contacted by an intelligent creature. So you kind of get, I feel like you're giving and taking away there. On the one hand, it's effectively infinite. It doesn't have a duration. It will last effectively forever. But as soon as any intelligent creature, and I think in original D&D, it actually doesn't even have intelligent. It says any creature. Just looking it up right here. Where are you, hallucinatory terrain? Is it a different level there? Anyway, so, but as soon as you have a player character just walk into the hallucinatory train, and it's probably outdoors, it's probably a very large area, I kind of want it to cover up a whole chasm or a whole secret road or a castle or something like that. But by the book here, as soon as a character engages with it, the whole thing immediately goes away. And so I go back and forth myself about what I would prefer. Do I want it to be something like a large, you know, it's fairly high level, a large phantasmal area that the characters can walk into and be confused and, you know, distracted by? And on the other hand, like if I'm, you know, if I'm using it in something like Chainmail, where it originally came up in a war game, I can see that it's efficient that as soon as, you know, my opponent moves a unit of forces into my hallucinatory forest, we should just remove it from the board at that point. It's just elegant to not be doing this, like, who knows about it and who doesn't know about it, and are we tracking which unit engaged with it and not? Just like, it's gone. It's get it off the table. And I go back and forth between the very different uses that I want between a war game and the role-playing game. If I want it to be kind of continuing, ongoing, confusing, and I day-to-day, I'm not entirely sure how I want to interpret hallucinatory terrain like that.
It seems like a useful thing to me in the war game setting, right? In both directions of like, oh, my enemy thought they were taking cover and aha, you're out in the open. Or my enemy is avoiding this path because it's difficult because they have to work their way through their trees, and then I just have my cavalry charge right through it because not really there. Haha. Right, you're exposed.
Yes.
But how does it show up? Like, am I casting it in the middle of the game and then getting the trees out and putting them on the table? And then isn't it like the trick's gone, right? Everyone knows it's fake.
I'm so glad you asked, Paul. And I'm grappling with the same thing. Like I'm looking at it in original D&D right now. Again, very sure it says by means of the spell terrain features can either be hidden or created, an illusion which affects a large area. Thus a swamp or a hill or a ridge or woods. And those are all the terrain types you put down in a game of chainmail, for what it's worth, can be concealed or made to appear. The spell is broken when the magic area is contacted by an opponent. So you can kind of see how this would work in a war game. So viewers, you can see a couple of years ago, I think it might have been two or three years ago, my partner Isabel and I playtested this specifically to try to figure out a smart solution to what Paul just asked on our Book of War stream. And so, it was actually one of our Thanksgiving holiday episodes that we did. And so we baked fake terrain out of brownies with grassy matcha on top, cut it up into hill-sized pieces, put it on our tabletop. And how we actually did it is we set it up in advance and said, look, if we are wizards, if we have wizards coming to the table, that player gets an extra terrain piece and then secretly marks which one is hallucinatory. And therefore, exactly like you were expecting, Paul, when an opposing force says, oh, I'm taking this hill here for some advantage, you reveal and say, oh, not an actual hill. You're just exposed. Ha ha, take the hill off. Yeah. And the player that's using it has to eat it. So we wound up eating all of our brownie hallucinatory terrain. And I'm telling you, we have never been so sick in this house ever. We were so sick. We were so deathly ill after that stream ended. Because we ate way too much of the hallucinatory terrain. Don't do that at home. Viewers.
But it would seem like that's the setup you would have to do, is that like you'd still, like, the trick is only semi there because we all know in the back of our heads there is probably a piece of hallucinatory terrain somewhere in the game, you know, unless you have it has to happen during setup, and then possibly you would have to have a referee, you know, so that we can put that piece of terrain into circuit where the referee knows about it and the player knows about it, but the other player doesn't. It's tough. It's a tough one.
Yeah. Without the judge, my best instinct was it's on the table in advance with a secret note about which one's fake.
was the best thing that I could think about.
Did it ultimately feel worth it? Was it worth the trade-off of whatever other spell you didn't take because you took Hallucinatory Terrain?
I think that there's better terrain options and worse. Like, I think a pond that's normally uncrossable is pretty good. You can go, whoops, that's actually, my forces can just run right between you because the pond's fake is pretty smart. So there's some better options and worse. I'm not going to say that it didn't break the game. So it's, it seemed okay.
It seems very dependent on the board itself, right? Like, you would have to know, we scouted the terrain in advance. We found the ideal place to put our hallucinatory terrain. We dropped it. It's just, I don't know. It seems a tricky one to get to pull off.
And that's largely the interpretation of how we do set it up, is that both how we normally play is both players roll some terrain and can put it anywhere they want on the board. So that is kind of the instinct. That's exactly probably both sides were jockeying, tried to come up with a reasonable spot before the battle happened. And so that's kind of in the mix of what we're thinking about. I don't think it's crazy.
Okay. And I want to go back to your original question of, like, so that usage versus something in a role-playing game, what the heck's the use case in an RPG?
Like, I think of there's a Walt Simonson Thor comic whereby Thor and a human companion are creeping up on a fairy castle, and the fairy castle looks all decrepit and ruined, like you wouldn't want to be interested in it. But if you have fairy sight, it turns out to be a glamorous, beautiful, well-maintained, obviously very interesting castle. And in that particular story, for what it's worth, one character can see it for real and one character can't. So the one character that can see it needs to lead the other character past all the illusionary traps and things like that. And so it's an ongoing problem that they have to keep working around. And that's always kind of, it seemed pretty cool to me. It's always kind of in the back of my head that this is a persistent, confusing illusion that you have to interact with on an ongoing basis.
Puts it in that realm of, like, this is a spell for DMs to use to create content with, more than, like, what's the use case for a player character saying, like, I cast Hallucinatory Terrain? I just don't see it.
Being chased by orcs and you make an illusionary chasm that they don't want to cross.
Chased by orcs. You got a better use of your, what is it, fourth level spell slot? I bet there's something that just kills all those orcs outright that way better than your hallucinatory terrain.
Well, I've thrown a lot of orcs at you in the past. I've thrown hundreds of orcs at you, and there wasn't any fourth level spell that wiped them out. So I feel like that's a possibility.
I know. I get the same vibe, but the other illusionary spell that always comes to my brain is, I think it's called Mass Morph. You remember this spell? Turn a whole bunch of people into looking like they're trees. Like, I guess that's a great ambush spell. If you don't have trees you could just hide in, then you could cast Mass Morph. Never saw it used in a game, not once. Every time I looked at that spell, I was like, really? Who the hell's casting this spell?
Now, you're clearly not alone about that, Paul, because that got wiped out of the game. Mass Morph is a spell that exists in first edition. I think it was gone. It was certainly gone by third edition and never came back. So you're in good company that nobody I miss Mass Morph, but nobody else does.
You do. Tell me the story, Dan, of when it got used in one of your games. I want to hear.
I'm not saying that. I'm not saying it got used. I'm just saying I missed it.
It is a weird spell. I could see crafting an adventure around it, right? And being like, oh, as you approach this castle, then the enemy, you know, the fairies are aware of your approach, and so they've put their people over here and cast Mass Morph on them, and you think you're just going through trees and they're gonna jump you. Mm-hmm.
First edition doesn't have many illustrations of the spells. There aren't a lot of, it's mostly just text, but Paul, Mass Morph is so important that they did dedicate an illustration to Mass Morph right here.
Here's the thing though. If I'm creating an adventure that includes an ambush in a forest as the players approach the castle, One, do I need a spell for that? I'm just going to make it up. Two, do I need magic for that? We could be invisible. We could just be very well camouflaged. We could be hiding in the trees. There's so many ways to pull off an ambush. I don't think I need a special spell that turns all my people into trees.
But if you have it, I mean, come on, it's beautiful. It's gorgeous. look at that. Don't you want that? Yeah. That is high fantasy right there, viewers.
It's come so on. Hot.
Give me some love. I have this intuition that there's some pulp literature thing where that happened, and I'm not coming up with it. So maybe one of our viewers can cite a piece of literature was like, there was a cool scene sometime, and that's going to be part of our game.
And isn't there like a whole bunch of text devoted to like, here's what happens to the people, right? Like they could be attacked and they could still bleed, but like they can't, right? They're still, they could stay, leave there I don't think you can target people who are unwilling, right? So your targets have to be willing to do this.
Yeah.
But, and then there's all these like bad things that happen if you leave them in the state for too long. Like who would agree to this? Who's like, listen, guys, the wizard has commanded us all to hang out here and he's going to turn us into trees. This is akin to someone being like, look, I know we're having trouble getting through the gates of this castle, but I've built this rather large horse.
Right? I mean, we're hiding in wood. Let's hide in wood. It's very on brand.
So
and I'm looking at the edition here, right, Paul? It does say, note, however, that blows to the creature trees will reveal their nature, as damage will be sustained by the creature struck and blood will be seen.
Yeah, great. My brain immediately goes to the poor dude who's in there in the tree, like, and he can't get out, right? Until the caster turns it off.
I think. Well, first edition, it's a little hazy.
It's a little hazy. Okay.
I mean, one advantage is most of the other stuff, right, at this point gets dispelled when you touch it. Well, with Mass Morph, it's more persistent now. You can walk through the grove. You can touch the trees, and they stick around. So it's among your best options for actually, like, this can't be an illusion because it's not going away when I touch it. It's totally actually real. Oh, you're just about to get jumped by 100 people. Another
use case where, like, the player characters climb the trees to look out over the land, and then, boom, ha-ha! You're being held by a battalion of men.
You know, and you're right, actually, even here it says the spell persists until the caster commands it to cease or dispel magic is cast. So you're right. The guides are, in fact, stuck.
I'm still just imagining like a big troop of warriors, a unit of men, all like in their armor with their spears, and the wizard being like, all right, gather up, everyone. I'm going to turn you into trees. And the soldiers being like, no thanks. I'm gonna say no.
There's a great question in the chat right this second by Cominius asking, Mass Morph feels like a war game artifact. Was it in chainmail, swords, and spells? I totally agree, Cominius. I have also been puzzled by this because it's not in chainmail. Other stuff is. And it's only in D&D. It's not in chainmail. It seems to me like clearly somebody must have used in a war game once upon a time. Now, every spell is in sword and spells, for what it's worth, briefly in a table of ranges. But Mass Morph actually is not in chainmail, and I've often been puzzled by that.
Very weird. Well, Dan, we are just about out of time here.
What?
Do you have any final thoughts on illusions in D&D?
I think I've been the victim of a Tempest Fugit spell, Paul. That my experience the past hour does not track what's correctly at all. I think it's something you want to think about. I am so surprised the disbelief mechanic came back in fifth edition in the Phantasmal Force spell. That really shocked me when I saw that. So I think that you want to, if we're playing an older edition where the DM has a little bit more leeway to interpret and fine tune things to their taste, I do think you really want to think about this. I think that the logical conclusion of illusions flat out doing damage with second edition saying just like, you can just make an auto, your, Your first level of illusion can just be auto-kill everything that it hits. It's clearly wrong. clearly can't be maintained. So you gotta think about these issues. And for me, I don't mind your low level illusions just being purely visual and being a puzzle for the players to reason out, I think is fairly interesting play. And I don't need to get any trickier with it than that, frankly.
Is that, yeah. Wait, so are you arguing for it should be silent and disappear as soon as players touch it, and therefore utterly useless to create enemies, to create creatures to fight?
It can be a distraction. I might make opponents make a morale check, possibly, for something very frightening that comes reasonable. Yeah.
But I'm not having my illusionary drag and breathe fire on you and have it actually hurt you. You're not getting
I would not do that myself.
Yeah, I think I agree with that. I think I could see that. I don't think it warrants a whole class. I'm skeptical of some of the spells. It worries me that I feel like some of the spells were created just to flesh out that class. I think I agree with you that like it could be clever. I don't know. I think I also would probably be inclined to try to really separate the spell version that's accessible to players versus what exists in the world if you're doing those kind of like puzzly trick things in rooms of dungeons and just say like, no, it's a different magic, whatever.
I can certainly see having higher level spells, and I think something I probably wrote on my blog is like, I can see the classic Phantasmal Force. If they'd made a decision about this is a spell that can do this much damage and here's a cap, that's reasonable. If you're saying it's just a visual trick, that would be reasonable. Or if you're saying I get a set of apparitional forces to fight for me, any one of those things would be reasonable. But to come out of the box and say they can just be the anything spell really causes a lot of problems.
Yeah, I'd be inclined to separate those out. I guess you could invent whatever you want for your permanent illusion. You know, I might take a page out of your book, Dan, and say like, well, it lasts a year and a day or something like that. Just to, you got it.
Yes.
If you're a powerful wizard who owns a tower, you gotta once a year when you're changing the batteries in your smoke detectors, you also gotta recast your illusions.
that makes sense for my world.
Viewers, if you have opinions, especially I would love to hear from anyone who has like great stories of how illusions impacted their game within the rules, because that's the part that I'm really struggling with the most, is I just don't have any great stories of like, oh, this illusion, it was just so clever or so interesting or did such a cool thing. I'm so glad that illusions exist. I don't know. Other than that, I think I'm inclined to agree with Dan here of like, yeah, it's nice for the little one-off trick, but I wouldn't leave it as this giant open-ended door. So anyway, viewers, as I said, if you have thoughts, please leave a comment in our comment section here for a YouTube video. We'd love to hear from you. Maybe that will spin up another show for us.
I think that's a really good ask, actually. And of course, remember that you can like, follow, and subscribe to us on YouTube, Twitch, Facebook, TikTok, Loops, and GitHub. We have the handle Wandering DMs on all the sites. So please carefully poke that like button.
If you prefer to listen to our show in audio only podcast format, you can do so. Those podcasts are available on our website at wanderingdms.com. You can also find them on various third-party podcast carriers such as iTunes, Spotify, and Pocket Cast. If you're listening to this show right now on one of those third-party sites and it gives the ability to do so, please rate and review our show. That helps other users find us, and we really appreciate it.
We really do. And of course, huge thanks to our patrons who support the show here. If you'd like to join them, please visit patreon.com/wanderingdms. Every tier gets you access to our private Discord server where the conversation's continuing 24/7. And like Paul said, we'll be there in about 10 minutes to continue this conversation, maybe get some more of your ideas of how illusions have worked well in your games in our live video after chat where we can interact with you. If you are in a Discord, in person, continue the conversation for about an hour or so. We are going to be back next week. And for what it's worth, we are planning on doing our annual best of the year wrap up of some of our best thoughts and guests and stuff like that. So maybe if you are on the Discord server, pitch in some things that you want to reflect back on for next week. And then after that, we'll be off for a couple weeks for our normal holiday respite. And then we'll be back early in the new year. So we do hope that you'll join us again next week on December 14th. Before we take our holiday break. You'll be back. Are you still wandering next week, Paul? Are you going to be distant or are you going to be back location?
Any appearance of me being elsewhere is mere illusion.
Should have disbelieved. I should have. I forgot. I forgot once again. So viewers, we're live every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern time someplace. So please join us again next week for another thought-provoking discussion.
We'll see you then.